KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. I'll be back in just a few minutes. Good evening, everyone. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. And it's about 4 minutes after 11 p.m. now on the 7th of May, 2007. Good to be with you tonight. And everyone listening out there in Columbia and elsewhere in mid-Missouri. Also on the web, wherever you may be. Hello. And let's get on to things. All right. Okay, In Thicket. You heard it right there. Wonderful stuff from local, regional, talented band. That song's called When I'm Gone. We'll hear more from a few different bands tonight, actually. I'll tell you a little bit more about the music in just a little while here. But first, let me do my thanks to Debbie Johnson. As always, Free Range Radio Theater, 10 p.m., 1 hour before this program every Monday. Debbie does wonderful stuff on the radio, playing classic and contemporary radio theater. Thanks to her for doing it and for everything she contributes here at the station, as well to Kelvin and Jason. Every week before Debbie, jazz plus blues equals comic book heroes. Tech radio, as always, interesting stuff, keeping us up on the incredulous world of high technology, wizardry, and Star Trek gadgetry. Jeff Wheeler always starts things off on Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. with Uncommon Light. Great radio on KOPN, great music, great talk. Lots of good stuff happening here, and it's good to be a part of it and with you all tonight. All right, thanks to everyone who listened to and enjoyed the program last week. And a great big thank you to Richard Allen Miller, remarkable guy. And the more I get to know him, and I know very little, but the more I do get to know him, I really like him. And I know one thing. I know he's doing really good work, and he's someone who I jive with. And so thanks to Richard for the connection and for coming on the program. We'll certainly have him back with us sometime this summer. And you can link to his website, of course, from my site in the program archives. Okay, just go to www.mikehagan.com, and you can check out all the things that we've been doing and the conversation that we had with Rick, with Richard Allen Miller last week. Okay, we also heard some killer independent music last week, compliments of Reality Entertainment, Marcy Playground, John Waz and the band, making great rock and roll. Just making good rock and roll music with a bite, certainly great lyrics as well, but just real good rock and roll music. And if you missed last week's program, the talk or the tunes, it is all on the web. One more time, mikehagan.com. Just go to the program archives, and you can check it out for yourself, see if you like it, and if you do, share it with someone else. And if you don't, just put it in the garbage can right there in the corner of your computer screen. All right, tonight's Mary J. Gettin. She's a writer. She's an animal lover. She's also the winner of the 2007 Nautilus Award for Literature as of this morning. Amazing. Really cool stuff and wonderful synchronicity that happened today. So we'll tell you a little bit more about that in a little while and a bit more about Mary. But she's wonderful. And if you like, you can hop on the web and go over to the Orbit website. You can read a little bit about Mary and click on through to her site, which is www.marygettin.com. And we'll talk with Mary in about 55 minutes, something like that. Top of the hour, right at midnight. And it's going to be fun, right? We'll talk about orcas and intelligence in nature and communicating with animals and things like this. What else? Music tonight. We'll be hearing a mixture of local artists with one thing in common. They all played last Friday night at the Blue Fugue in a benefit concert for KOPN, which frankly just rocked the house. And like I said, we started things off with In Thicket, and that song was called When I'm Gone. And we'll hear, well, some more from a bunch of different bands throughout the program tonight. Of course, Rutherford was there, Ruth, Jeff, Jason and the band, In Thicket, as I mentioned, Big Medicine had a great set, some great guitar playing going on there. Who else did we have? Bachman played late, kick butt. And who in between? Oh, the Hoot and Hollers and Caulfield and the Magic. Oh, man, Michael and Casey had a great set on Friday night. So anyway, six great local regional bands all donating their time and their music and their art to raise some money for the radio station here. And I appreciate it. And they did a wonderful job. And so we'll feature a lot of their music tonight. And we'll also ask the listeners tonight to recognize what's happening here at KOPN. It is our fund drive. We've been having sort of a quiet fund drive for the last month or so. We need to raise about $30,000 to keep the station on the air and happening. And I'm going to ask you guys for some help tonight. But let's sort of take a left turn here and say hello to somebody on the phone here. I'm not sure who's calling. Hello, welcome to Orbit. Who's this?
Linda Barrett.
I'm sorry?
Linda Barrett.
Hi, Linda. You're on the air. You know that?
No.
Oh, were you trying to call to make a pledge or something?
No, I'm trying to listen to the Mary Gettin.
Oh, yeah. Well, you should be listening to it. I'll be on the air with her in about 50 minutes, but the phone was ringing there, so I just picked it up. And
I'm sorry. So call back in about 50 minutes?
Oh, do you actually want to talk with Mary?
No, I just want to listen.
Oh, well, you don't have to call in to listen.
Okay.
Where are you located?
Houston, Texas.
You're in Houston, Texas. Do you have an internet connection?
Yes.
If you get on the web and go to KOPN.org.
All right.
KOPN.org. Just it should be pretty apparent there. There'll be a little button up on top that says Listen Live.
All right.
And just sort of click through there, and you'll have a couple different options, but you should be able to listen right through your computer there.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Linda, thanks. Take care of yourself, all right?
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. So there, a listener from Houston, Texas, trying to call in and listen to the program over the telephone. So we'll let her listen over the web and keep the line open for Mary J. Gettin when we talk with her in about 45 minutes or so. But at any rate, it is Pledge Drive Week, And we're trying to raise $30,000. We're about halfway there. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I never do. I'll tell you exactly what I think about it, though, okay? First of all, I have lots of free books and things like that, music, CDs and things, if people will donate some money and help KOPN out here. And you guys know the people that I talk to. And so I have that sort of stuff to, and the people that we listen to here on the program, that's the sort of stuff that I'd be able to give to you as a sort of a promotional gift, if you can make a donation to KOPN. And I'm not going to go through all that stuff, but just, you know, use your imagination, lots of cool stuff. T-shirts as well. I'm glad to offer someone a Radio Orbit T-shirt or a KOPN T-shirt, something like that. I've got some great T-shirts, you know, that sort of limited edition, the ones with Terrence on them. But anyway, the way it works here, you know, KOPN is a non-commercial, non-corporate, independent, community-run, and community-driven radio station. And we operate because people donate their money to keep us on the air. That's exactly the way it works. And basically, it's like this. You know, if you want to support Walmart, you go and you buy stuff from Walmart. You know, you want to support J.P. Morgan Chase, you use your Visa or MasterCard. And if you want to support free speech on the FM dial and on the Internet, then you spend some of your money on KOPN. Simple as that. It's just, you know, it's just economics. You support what you like. And, you know, the gods and the goddesses know we need your help. My listeners have the unfortunate burden of actually being aware of some of the things that are going on in the world around them and realize the assault that free speech is under in this country and how important it is to have unbiased, non-commercial, non-corporate media. And that's what we are here at KOPN for 34 years, doing it all with volunteers like myself and support from the community, and that's you. And so I know the people that are listening to this program recognize the value in what's happening here, and not just my program. Maybe you don't even like my program, you know. If you do, good. You know, if Orbit is important to you and you appreciate what this program is about, or if you just support open access radio and free speech in general, then please make a donation and help support the efforts over here. There are forces at work that would have us shut down so fast it'd make your head spin. Don't kid yourself. There are. But we are not going to let that happen. We haven't let it happen. And, you know, we're just looking for allies and partners and friends. And you actually become a part of the station. You know, you get a membership. It's $40 is the minimum to actually have a membership here at the station for a year. And, you know, you can participate in board meetings. You can come and visit the station. Anybody can come to the station. But you can actually, you know, be a part of the decisions that go on here. You can send an email to, you know, the general manager, and he'll actually read it and care about it, and, you know, those sort of things. So anyway, the way to do it, if you'd like, is on the web at kopn.org. I'm by myself here in the studio, so I can't answer phones and all that stuff, but please get on the web, go to kopn.org and make a donation, and just, you know, put a little note that it's for Orbit, you know, in the comments section or something, so they don't throw me off the air. And you know, we'll just continue doing what we're doing, but we need your help to do it. And I appreciate those that do support the station already. I know it's not an easy time for a lot of people, myself included. You know, times are tight. But give what you can, and recognize that you got to pay for good radio, just like you got to pay for bad merchandise and bad television and bad cell phone service. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We'll play another piece of music here. This is from my friends, Ruth and Jeff, Jason. The band is called Rutherford, and this song is called Happiness. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a little while with Mary J. Genton.
you finally got what you want. Take a good look right at it. So you finally got what you want. Does it make you realize you can never be satisfied unless you decide?
Happiness. It's from a band called Rutherford and the CD called Mapping Out Chaos. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, on the web at kopn.org. Hello to everyone listening to us this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves, live or otherwise, or over the internet. Every Monday we broadcast a show from the studios here at KOPN in downtown Columbia, Missouri, and we stream the show live as well on the web at kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. You'll get a wonderful 64K stream. And we can also be heard live on the web every Monday night via Cosmic Waves Radio. And you can find them on the web at cosmicwavesradio.com. Thanks to everybody at KOPN and Cosmic Waves for making it happen. And to everyone who listens to the program, I appreciate it. Thanks always to Larry, the web wizard, as always. Back in Hawaii at long last and back with us. Got a wonderful new updated design for the website. Awesome as ever. Got a couple things to sort of tweak out of it, but as always, just wonderful stuff coming from Larry. I love you, my brother. And thanks as well to the people out there sending art, music, and poetry. New stuff in the Poets Corner. Awesome. Send more and more. We'll find a place for it. And if I don't get to it, I apologize. There are a couple people that have sent music, and this guy, John Cale, who's amazing, who I keep meaning to mention, who I've yet to contact, but I'm very impressed by the stuff that he's doing as an artist in particular, frankly, a visual artist. He does these amazing illustrations. But anyway, and a musician as well. Anyway, lots of people have sent stuff, and I'm sorry if I don't respond, you know, quickly, and I'm not the most organized with some of this stuff, and I recognize that, and I'm trying to get better at it. I never realized that, you know, I'd actually start to get a lot of stuff. And so now that I am sort of getting a little bit more than, you know, you can listen to overnight or whatever, it just requires me to learn a little bit more about how to be more organized with it and that sort of thing. But I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I promise that, you know, the stuff isn't lost. And I'll try to get to everybody who's sending things, all right? Okay. For the stuff that I have recognized and that we have found, you can find it on the web at mikehagan.com. It's mikehagan.com. You'll have access to everything we're doing there. And just go over there, take a look, see, and share your thoughts with us. Lots of ways to do that. There's a forum bulletin board that is always busy and always interesting these days. Lots of breaking news and interesting topics discussed all the time. And I wish I could just sort of spend the afternoon, you know, putting up stories and responding to other people's posts and this sort of thing. It's real cool, though. And there's a live chat room that's up and active right now. And, of course, could be used any time, whether we're on the air or not. And you can find that just by going to the website and just clicking through and finding the link for the chat room, okay? I'll peek in there in the next, I don't know, half hour or so and say hello to everyone and see if there are any questions for Mary. And I'll try to pull some stuff from there. But I encourage my guests as well as my listeners to join us over there in the chat room and in the forum. It's a great place to correspond and get to know, you know, like-minded kindred spirit folk, if you know what I'm saying. All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio at AOL.com. Send email to me, or to my guests, or to the musicians that appear on the program. Everybody's interested in your comments and your you know, criticisms and all that stuff. We're interested in sharing information and ideas, and, you know, sometimes it's not always pretty, but, you know, it's the way you figure things out. So, anyway, we're open to it and welcome it. So please, one more time, orbitradio at AOL.com. And if you want to go and visit any of the musicians or previous guests that have been on the program, you can do that through the website. Just click over to the archives page, either the music archives for musicians, obviously, or the program archives for the interview guests, and you'll probably be able to find easy ways to get in touch with them through those sections of the site, okay? And like I say, everyone likes to hear from you. Okay, the phone number here at the station, if we take phone calls later on, I'm not sure if Mary will want to take calls, we'll find out, but write this down just in case. Area code 573-443-8255. That's 573-443-TALK. And we'll have a talk with Mary J. Kenton in about 35 minutes. Okay, upcoming guests. Let me tell you a little bit about what's happening in the next few weeks. As I said tonight, Mary J. Getton will talk about intelligent animals, communication with them. Her book, Communicating with Orcas, won the Nautilus Award for Literature just this morning. So it's a big day for Mary. And we'll talk about it in a little while. But yeah, midnight, right around midnight, Mary J. Getton. Next week, take a little bit of a breather and catch up on the news. Give myself a chance to chat about a few things that have been on my mind. I've had a couple emails. You know, people listen pretty closely, and if I say something and then don't follow through, they sort of ask me to do it. And I'm amazed at how closely certain people listen. I probably shouldn't be. But anyway, I'll try to take care of some of that stuff, and we'll do a sort of just show with me and you on the 14th next week. Paul Laffoley, wonderful artist, architect, back on the 21st of May. B. Wilson, haven't quite nailed a date down with her, but she knows a lot about honeybees. I'm learning a little bit about this myself. Maybe I'll talk about that in the news tonight. Neil Adams, very interesting guy, has an idea about what he calls the growing earth theory. So we'll talk with Neil Adams sometime in the future. Patrick Flanagan, still trying to work things out with him. Dr. Richard Tarnas, coming up sometime in the summer. John Major Jenkins, John and I talk all the time. He's great, doing great work, really busy right now. Richard Miller back again. Of course, Rick was on the program last week, but he and I really hit it off. And Rick Miller will be back on the program sometime this summer for sure. We got to talk to Michael and Star when they get back from Russia. Dennis later this summer. So lots going on. It's going to be a wonderful and information-packed summertime, I hope. And a lot of it's great information, very hopeful and positive stuff. So I hope you all tune in tonight for the rest of the program and in the future for the great stuff that's coming up over the next few weeks and months, all right? All right, tonight, as I said, music-wise, I'm going to be playing a bunch of stuff from bands that played at this KOPN event that we did last weekend, last Friday night, at the Blue Fugue. And they're awesome. And there were six bands there. And I'll play some music from all of them in just a little while. Before I was going to play a song right now, but I think let me tell you one other thing. Henry David Thoreau passed away in 1962, May 6th, and that's worthy of note. So, whatever you thought about him, you can think it right now. Because yesterday, he would have been old. Died in 1962, May 6th. Henry David Thoreau, of course, known for Walden, among many other things, but he was a philosopher and a naturalist. He was also like an anti-war activist and an anarchist of sorts, a real resistor of government and this sort of thing. Somebody who we can really take some tips from today, as a matter of fact. Forget about Walden for a while, because we're not going to get to Walden unless we get these creeps out of power, all around, not just in this country, but all around this place that we call Earth. And it starts in your own hometown. So, get things straight there, and then we'll work it out from there. But anyway, go read some Henry David Thoreau, perhaps, and check out what he said about resistance to civil government when you have an unjust state. He was awesome. July 12th, 1817, to May 6th, 1862. Here's to him, Henry David Thoreau. All right, as I said, KOPN show, May 4th, last Friday, Rutherford, Big Medicine, the Hooten Hallers, Johnny and Andy, great stuff, Caulfield and the Magic, Michael, Casey, Zach, In Thicket, Derek Jenkins, I think probably my favorite in town, and Rob, pleasure to meet Rob from In Thicket, and Bachman, Danny and Sean, the rest of the guys, everybody, great stuff. Thank you so much for doing it. Thank you to the Blue Fugue for making the venue available. Ben and Scott and Anthony and everybody else over there doing great stuff, and I really appreciate the help that you did or that you provided for us this weekend to make that happen. And of course, everyone who came out and supported local independent music, the great music scene here in Columbia that's just just growing and thriving. And for supporting KOPN, raised a little bit of money and had a great time, and we'll do it again this summer, okay? All right, with that in mind, let's play a piece of music. Oh, man, let's see. How about, I got so many to choose from, I don't know what I should do. I think we'll speed things up a little bit here and play a couple, actually, a short one, and then one that's a little bit longer from Johnny O and the Jerks. This is Johnny's band, okay. A guy named John plays for Johnny O and the Jerks out of St. Louis, but he also plays with another guy named Andy, and they do a little thing that they call the Hooten Hollers. And the Hooten Hollers were here doing the show on Friday night, but they don't have any recorded material, so the best I can do is play some Johnny and the Jerks. So, without any more digression on my part, this is Mean Mean Miss Guillotine and White Knuckle Rock. Back in a few minutes, it's Mike Lewis to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Well, there's a highway to mama living in a cemetery. Got a lust for blood, all spotted fairy. Mama living in a call him as a good as me. When you drop that plane, baby, don't let it jump on me. Make me this guillotine. Oh, I work what a mean machine. You're gonna make me shiver, you're gonna make me scream.
Lose your head.
White Knuckle Rock. That's Johnny O and the Jerks. We heard Mean Miss Guillotine. Before that, it's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's about 22 minutes before the toll of the bell at midnight. We'll be rolling over to May 8th, 2007. Already halfway done with this year almost. Can you believe it? And, well, we're just going to move right on through, okay? Hey, I got a call, by the way, at the break there. Well, I got a couple. But anyway, hello to Matt, and I'll see you tomorrow. Matt does a great rockabilly show every once in a while, maybe once a month, twice a month on KOPN. It'll be tomorrow at 4 p.m. And Big Cat Matt, check it out, rockabilly music tomorrow on KOPN. And anyway, he digs the band that I just played, and he called. But then I had another call, somebody wanted me to point out something about Thoreau. And there are certain anarchist groups in the sort that claim Thoreau as an inspiration, but Civil Disobedience, the piece that Thoreau wrote, one of the pieces that he wrote, calls for improving rather than abolishing government. I'm not sure where I really stand with regard to that. but he had a quote from that particular piece. It was and said, "I asked for not at once no government, but at once a better government." I guess I agree with that if you can pull it off. But anyway, you know, a typical anarchistic position might be that the government is best which governs not at all. So, anyway, a little bit more about Henry David Thoreau, and back to you here. About 20 minutes now till midnight. Space weather, really quickly here. Actually, we got a little bit of time. I don't have to rush through it. I'm so used to having to boogie through things because the show's been so busy during these first hours over the last few weeks and sort of unconventional. But at any rate, asteroid flyby. This week, there is a pretty good-sized asteroid, number 1862 Apollo. 1862. All right, I wonder if that's when it was discovered. Actually, no, it was discovered in 1932. And it is about a mile wide and, I don't know, about 100 yards wide, something like that. And if you have a big telescope in the southern hemisphere, you'll be able to see it. And it'll glow probably like a 13th or 12th magnitude star. And it'll be sliding through the constellations of Microscopium and Grus. And if you want details on the ephemeris, the orbital details, you can go over to spaceweather.com and, you know, figure it out. All right, also the sun. There was a pretty interesting sunspot that's been moving across the disk over the last couple of weeks, and it is now disappearing. Sunspot 953, about at the end of its rotation on the front side where it's looking at us. And although it was quite an interesting area on the sun, it didn't really have any particular large flares or anything that was really noteful, other than it was putting up some great photographs. Anyway, we're saying goodbye to that sunspot 953. We'll see what else rolls around in the next few days. There is an interesting filament that's kind of coming out of the core of the sunspot, and there have been some very interesting photographs that have been taken of that that have this great three-dimensional effect. And you can check all this stuff out on the web, like I say, over at spaceweather.com. Lots of images from other people and from other satellites up there. And great stuff being reported over there, as always. I appreciate the work they do. All right, what's happening up there in the heavens or on the Earth here with regard to the heavens? May 9th, asteroid 2606 Caltech, closest approach to Earth, getting pretty tight with us in the next couple of days. The comet P2007H3 Girard will be getting close to Earth, pretty close on May 10th, as a matter of fact, about an astronomical unit away, about 90 million miles. May 10th and 11th, the lecture on the search for Earth-like planets, looking for signs of life. That's Pasadena, California. May 10th through the 12th, the workshop on dynamics and thermodynamics of black holes and naked singularities. Sometimes I just like to say these because I think they're, you know, they're just interesting just to say. What the hell is a naked singularity? I thought a singularity was sort of everything at once. I guess it's naked and clothed at the same time. Anyway, that's in Milan, Italy. The 12th, Cassini, another Titan flyby. And on the 12th, again, the moon occults Uranus. For those in the astrological realm, I'm sure that is of some significance. Somebody might tell us what it is. Post it up on the web. All right, night sky notes. Oh, let's see. Tomorrow, Mercury sort of behind the sun. Just coming out from behind the sun, actually, and you might be able to see it after sunset. You can look for Mercury very low in the west-northwest, even with binoculars. Each day this week, Mercury will get about 1 degree closer to Venus. So you can sort of use those two as a map up there if you're looking for other things. Venus will be setting at its most northern point on the horizon today and tomorrow. Actually, that's on May 9th and 10th, Wednesday and Thursday. And it'll be setting about 3.5 hours after the sun on the northwest horizon. On the 10th, what's happening up there? Venus and Saturn, They're at about a 45-degree angle right now, getting closer to one another. By the end of June, those two will be right next to one another, essentially. Venus and Jupiter are almost opposites right now. Jupiter will be rising in the southwest. It'll be about 6 degrees up in the southwest, and Venus about 6 degrees west-northwest. And, of course, this is always a few hours after sunset for the most part. Anyway, as always, interesting things happening up there in the skies above your heads. You can go find out more if you decide to. All you can do is get on the Internet and go do some searching. There's a great little piece of free software out there called Stellarium that one of my buddies on the website over there that hangs out at the forum posted up for us, Smarter Martyr. And it's a great little piece of software called Stellarium, and you can set it up for your own longitude and latitude, and then on your computer screen actually have very realistic depictions of what's happening in the skies directly above your heads in your particular neck of the woods. Really cool. And I think that's stellarium.com, and it's free. So go check that out if you're interested in this stuff, okay? And you can also, you know, you can also forward it in time and put it backwards in time so you can see the way the heavens rotate, and sort of interesting, okay? All right, look, I've got to get Mary J. Getten on the phone. So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to put a piece of music on here from a band that played Friday night called Big Medicine. And this is a tribute to Bob Dylan that was recorded at something that was called the Million Dollar Bash. And it was last May, actually May 7th last year, 1 year ago exactly, today, at the Bridge in Woolridge, Missouri. That's a studio down there. So anyway, Big Medicine, Eddie and the guys, thanks so much for doing your thing on Friday. You rocked the house. Great music and great guitar playing for sure. So check it out. It's Big Medicine. It's Mike. This is Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. I'm going to get Mary on the phone. We'll come back in a few minutes with her. We'll do some news and get things going at the top of the hour with Mary J. Getten, okay? You can check all this stuff out on the web, by the way, at MikeHagan.com and see what we'll be doing a little bit later in the program, okay? We'll be back in just a little bit. One more time, Big Medicine. This one is called It's All Over Now, Baby Blue.
Well, you must leave now. Take what you want, you think. But whatever you wish to keep, you better grab. Understand you're open with his gun.
All right, it's all over now, Baby Blue. Tribute to Bob Dylan. That's Big Medicine. Great stuff from Eddie and the guys. Thanks so much again for coming out Friday and playing your music and sharing your art with everyone down there at the Blue Fugue in a benefit for KOPN. And as I said earlier in the program, we're trying to raise a little bit of money for the station right now. You can do it on the web at kopn.org. You know we need it. You know we spend it wisely. Not a whole lot of frivolous stuff happening up here. You can come up for yourself and see it. And I appreciate anyone who supports our efforts here at KOPN. Okay, let's see. We got a few minutes here, and I'll do a couple things in the news, and then we'll get to our guest right at the top of the hour at midnight with Mary J. Gettin. Going to be a fascinating conversation with her tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. Got her on the line. Everything's cool. And let's see. What do I have here on my notes as far as the news? Frog juice in high demand. There you go. This is sort of, you know, I was such a downer last week. I thought I'd do some fun stuff this week, okay? Listen to this. This is from Lima, Peru. Frog juice in high demand. Carmen Gonzalez plucks one of the 50 frogs from the aquarium at her bus stop restaurant, bangs it against tiles to kill it, and then makes two incisions along its belly and peels off the skin as if husking corn. She's preparing frog juice, a beverage revered by some Andean cultures for having the power to cure asthma, bronchitis, sluggishness, low sex drive, etc. A drink of so-called Peruvian Viagra to some people. Anyway, I won't go into more about it, but I thought it was sort of an interesting story, and I hope I'm not offending our guest who's on the phone, but I think that it might be something that she might want to speak to. But I mean, you know, we eat animals, and you know, we eat plants, and everything is alive, and you know, I don't know if you're supposed to eat frogs like this and make juice out of them or whatever, but anyway, some people are doing that. What else are they doing? They're exploring ancient caves and paintings in Nepal. This is a wild story. They found some ancient caves that are basically on the side of this cliff, a sheer cliff in this remote area of northern Himalaya, or the northern Himalayans in the north of Nepal. And it's a lot, in my, and again, you can go to my website and just go over to the forum and read this stuff. It's from Reuters in the UK, but it says, explorers find ancient caves and paintings in Nepal. And they found these things at 14,000 feet. There's at least 12 of these gigantic cave complexes with absolute treacherous, in other words, how do they get to them and from them? It's outrageous. It's a lot like, at least for me, it reminded me of the whole Chaco Canyon Anasazi business that is such a mystery and an enigma to us to this day, what happened down there, the cave dwellers of the Southwest in the Americas. Anyway, that's on the board, and people talking about that. What else do we have here? Scientists identify brightest supernova. This one is an interesting story. It has to do with a star that I've been watching for a long time called Eta Carina. I'm going to read a quick bit of it to you here. Scientists identify brightest supernova. Telescopes spot distant phenomenon that may be repeated closer to home. Scientists say they have detected the brightest stellar explosion ever recorded, a new breed of supernova that may well be repeated sooner than they previously thought. The violent explosion was observed by ground-based telescopes orbiting blah, 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 but the observations hint that an erupting star in our own galaxy called Eta Carina could be close to the same kind of blast, astronomers say in a paper to be published in the Astrophysical Journal. Now, this is big news, all right? Eta Carina is in our galaxy. If it does what this other star did, trust me, folks, everyone will know about it, okay? So if you're interested, go to, maybe New Scientist, a good place to check this out, or just Google or use whatever your favorite search engine is and put in Eta Carina, E-T-A space Carina, C-A-R-I-N-A. And sometimes people add an E at the end of that. But Eta Carina is the star in question. And there are people who think that, well, she's already in the middle of a very interesting, period in the star's life. And these things are alive, in my opinion, and intelligent, in my opinion. Believe it or not, if you think I'm crazy, that's fine. But anyway, we're going to talk to someone in just a couple of minutes about intelligence right here on our own planet. Mary J. Getten is her name. You can find out information about her on the web at maryjgetten.com. And we'll have her in just a few minutes. I'll play one more piece of music here, get things together. We'll come back with Mary just probably a couple ticks after midnight, and we'll have her for the next couple of hours talking about animals in general, orcas and dolphins in particular, and whatever else comes up in the conversation. She's a very interesting woman who has a lot to talk about, and there are already a lot of questions coming out of the chat room and in email, so we have plenty to talk about, and we'll do that in just a few minutes, okay? So it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is Bachman. The song is called Tied to the Moon. Back in just a few minutes. Check all this out on the web and get a leg up, by the way, on the internet at www.mikehagan.com.
Red one, show me. You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, you are listening to Mike Hagan on Radio Orbit and KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. Just a couple of minutes after midnight now, on the 8th of May, 2007. And in a moment, we will say hello to our guest tonight. Her name is Mary J. Getten. And we're speaking to her from her place on the West Coast in Washington State. She is a lifelong animal lover. She's an author, a speaker, a woman who knows a lot about flower essence practitioner. She worked in marine mammal rehabilitation for many years, wildlife rehabilitation, and she's the recipient of a very unique book award that in a strange synchronicity actually happened this morning. So without further delay, we will say hello, welcome, and thank you very much to Mary J. Getten. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you tonight?
I'm great.
Thanks very much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's probably been a big day for you. You forwarded an email to me this morning about this wonderful award that you got for your book, and I'll mention it right off the bat, called Communicating with Orcas. And it really wasn't the way I was going to start the program, but I had to mention it right off the bat. Congratulations, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about the Nautilus Award.
Wow, thank you. Well, thanks very much. Yeah, it's an award that recognizes books that promote spiritual growth and conscious living, positive social change. So, I'm thrilled to get this award. It's given out in many categories, and I won the animals and nature category. But
did you know you were up for?
Yeah, I did, actually. I did. But I didn't ever dream that I would actually win it. So it's really great. And I love the motto of these people. It's changing the world one book at a time.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I do it one radio show at a time.
That's right.
Anyway, certainly along the same lines, and I'm glad we're able to sort of combine the two arts tonight. So let's talk a little bit more, first of all, about you. Certainly there are many of my listeners that may be a little bit familiar with your work because I've had you up on the website for a few days. But for those who aren't, and for me, please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got to be who you are.
Wow. Well, that's a big question, isn't it?
But it is. We have plenty of time, though. So.
Okay. I guess I would say really that my journey with animals goes back to really when I was a kid. I grew up one of those girls wanting to go and sit in the jungle with Jane Goodall and study chimpanzees, and you know how life goes. It just never quite works out that way. But, you know, I really wanted to work with animals, and I just never pursued it, you know. I think I was actually, you know, too afraid to fail or something. So I didn't do it for a very long time. But in my mid-30s, I was living in San Francisco, and I started volunteering at the Marine Mammal Center, which is a hospital for seals and sea lions.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fell madly in love with all the marine mammals.
Yeah, there's a huge population of them up there in San Francisco in the bay there.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so cool. They hang out on the rocks and talk to you.
I know. And they're so fun. I really love them. Seals are just one of my favorite little critters in the world.
Well, my webmaster picked a great photo of you to put up on the website with you and this...
with the seal pup?
And with the seal pup. I don't know if you saw it, but it's a great photo of you.
I know the photo, but no, I hadn't seen it on your website.
Anyway, so you're there working with them.
Yeah, so I was working at the center with the seals and sea lions, and it was in 1988. I was at a dog walkathon, and there was this woman sitting there with all these dogs around her, just sort of staring at her, and I couldn't figure out what was going on, and I went over and I asked her what she was doing, and she said, "Well, I'm talking to these dogs." And I said, "Well, you can do that?" She said, "Oh, yeah, that's what I do, and I teach classes," and I thought, oh, great, you know, if I could talk to the seals and the sea lions, I would be such an asset to the center because you know, we were just picking these guys up on the beach. We didn't know what was wrong with them, how long they'd been sick, where it hurt, anything like that.
Mm.
So I signed up on the spot to take a class, and it was Penelope Smith, who is probably the foremost pioneer in this world of animal communication. And so I started studying. I set out to learn how to communicate telepathically with animals. And, you know, it was great. And I would come to the center on Wednesday night. I was the crew leader, and I'd come in, and I'd talk to some of the animals, and then I'd go get the director of animal care, and I'd say, you know, this elephant seal over here has a really bad stomach ache. And she would look at me kind of sideways and say, okay, thank you, you know, like, get her out of here.
Right. Well, it's amazing, and it's amazing that, you know, most people, I think, would probably be surprised that there's actually a field of study at all, you know, of animal communication and this sort of thing. So it is certainly new to a lot of people, but it's amazing because you went through exactly what you would sort of expect. People sort of look at you and go, well, she's nuts or whatever. But anyway, please continue.
Well, that was 1988.
Uh-huh.
And in those days,
wow,
really, people
years.
Would go, you know, practically, you know, screaming into the streets when you said something like that. And actually, in those days, I think there were only 5 or 6 people working professionally in the world.
Uh-huh.
So it really was an unknown field.
Right.
And so, you know, I just found that, you know, since everybody thought I was totally crazy, I just, you know, I quit doing it. I quit talking to the animals because it was so hard for me to have information that I couldn't do anything with.
Mm.
So it was just easier for me to kind of just, okay, I'm just going to put this aside because if I talk to them, I know something, I can't do anything about it, then I feel even worse. So I did put it away for a few years, and I moved up to the San Juan Islands, which are between the mainland of Washington State and Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
Right, it's beautiful there.
Yeah, and I came up here specifically because through my work with the seals and sea lions, I really fell in love with the whales. And I wanted to find a place I could live and work with whales. And so I moved to Orcas Island, and we have a large population of orcas up here, resident orcas. And I just made, you know, animals my life, really, when I came up here, and that was in 1990. So I started working at the Whale Museum in Friday Harbor, and I worked at Wolf Hollow, which is the wildlife center. I became one of the coordinators for the Marine Mammal Stranding Network. I started working with the Oil Spill Association. And I scored the ultimate job, a naturalist on a whale watch boat.
Wow.
So,
some job.
You know, it was, I mean, it was like a dream come true.
Right.
But it was being out there on the water with the whales, and I was, you know, trying to read about them and find out about them, and there was hardly anything written about orcas. We only started studying these whales back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was very little written. What there was, you know, real facts and figures and guesstimates on what they're up to.
Right.
Because whales only spend about 5% of their time at the surface. So most of their life, they're underwater and they're hidden from our view. So there's really very limited amount of things we can get about their existence.
And when they're on the surface, they're sort of doing predictable things. They always
generally
do the same thing when they're up there for the most part.
Right. They're breathing.
Breathing or kicking around or jumping or something, but not much else, right?
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So after I spent a few years on the water, you know, watching the whales, I was out there like 100 days of summer with them.
Did you dive? Are you a diver? Do you ever go in the water with them?
No. And there is a law in the United States. You have to stay 100 yards from any whales.
Is that
any
right?
Cetaceans.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, what if they come up to you?
Well, you know, it's okay if they come up to you, but technically, I actually wouldn't dive with a wild orca, personally.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have a really good sense of humor, and they might just see if you bounce like a seal or a sea lion.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think it's something I would actually do.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Very interesting. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're on the boats, though, and you're observing for a long time.
Right. And then I realized, you know, I have to go back and really start studying that animal communication stuff again. Because I realized that, you know, I'd always wanted to be this researcher with Jane in the jungle. And, you know, life comes upon you. You know, you don't have the money for school and all of that kind of stuff. And I suddenly got it that with telepathy, I could do all the research I ever wanted to do. I didn't have to have a degree. I didn't have to do research grants. You know, I didn't have to amass money.
Mm-hmm.
I could just sit there and do it.
Right.
So that's what I did. I started talking to the whales after I studied for a few more years with many different teachers. But once I got serious about it, things fell into place. And yeah, so it was in 96, actually, I teamed up, I got another communicator, a friend of mine, came up to the islands, I took her out to see the whales, I asked her to talk to one of the whales for me to verify some information I was getting, because I didn't have anybody I could talk to. The scientists up here really did not want to hear about this at all.
Right.
Not a bit. And I also was making my living as a naturalist, so I had to be careful about who I was talking to about this.
Right.
And, you know, if people knew I could talk to the whales, then expectations would come up about, you know, me getting the whales to come over to the boat or tell us where they are and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So
right.
I had to really stay.
Yeah, people want magic tricks.
Yes, they do.
That's what they want.
They do, and yeah. They want favors.
Right.
That's the other thing. So I did find this friend. You know, I made friends with this other communicator, and we set out to find out about the whales from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to do that through an interview process. And so we spent a year sitting together, and we would take turns. One of us would connect mentally or telepathically with the whale, and the other person would be like the interviewer. So they would ask the questions, and we tape recorded everything, and I meticulously transcribed every word. So
when you say talk, essentially it's not a spoken thing that's happening. You're doing things with words in your mind, essentially.
Right. Well, yeah, I should probably explain how telepathy works. I mean, telepathy really is the universal language, and it's how animals all communicate with each other. You can telepathically communicate with plants, with rocks, with anything alive, anything that has consciousness. And it's like a direct mind-to-mind, or sometimes you could say it's a heart-to-heart communication.
Mm, yeah.
But it goes beyond our five senses. And it's more like feeling across a distance, and time and space doesn't matter. So I can talk to the whales, you know, when I'm in Australia, I can still check in with the whales here and see how they're doing.
A particular whale?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
As an individual?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's where
that's remarkable.
I had an advantage on this project was because I had already spent several years out in the water every day with this family. And so I knew them. You know, I could pick them out by sight from, you know, a half a mile away. There's Granny, there's Ruffles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I knew them very well. And I'd also early on developed this odd habit of yelling at them out the window.
Right.
So when I would see Granny, I'd yell, "Hey, Granny!" you know, off the boat. And so what that did was, you know, over time, she got to know who I was. And so when I started talking to her, I said, you know, I'm that blonde woman who yells at you from the boat. She was like, "Oh, yeah, I know you."
Oh, my gosh.
So because I knew them physically in person before I started talking to them telepathically, I think it was a lot easier for me.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, what's next then?
Well, I mean, when you're getting information telepathically, it comes in different ways, and it depends on which of your channels are the most open and kind of who you are, and sometimes even the kind of animal you're talking to will depend on the way you get the information. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I get words, and very often I get absolutely just a running conversation.
Mary, may I ask you a question about discernment?
Sure.
How important is clarity of mind in this sort of thing, so that you know which thoughts or which, you know, which communication is actually coming from this other creature and what's being generated by the chatter of your own mind and that sort
right.
of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because, you know, telepathic communication often sounds a lot like your own inner voice.
Uh-huh.
And so I found it took me many years of doing it and practicing it and getting a feel for when you have that felt sense of true communication coming through when it wasn't your own projection.
Mm-hmm.
And also by working with clients, with animals, you know, I can see when there's been a behavior change after we have a conversation, you know, mm-hmm. or things like that. That tells you, yeah, you know, I was actually talking to that animal and we worked out this deal and he's following it and, you know, things have worked out now. So, but in the beginning, that's the hardest thing. It's because people tend to doubt what they're getting.
Right.
And it's difficult, but what ways you can overcome that is by working with animals that you can get validation from their person.
Hmm.
So asking questions that you already know the answer to. Or working with other people, asking the same animal the same set of questions.
Hmm.
And so you have, you know, feedback from different people. Like,
right.
I did that with Keiko. You remember Keiko?
The orca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Free Willy.
Uh-huh.
There was a woman down in Oregon, a communicator, who was really campaigning hard to keep him there, to keep him from being released, because he did not want to be released.
Hmm.
And I had been down to visit him. I have a whole chapter in my book about him. And he was scared. He didn't want to go. He loved it in Newport, Oregon. And, you know, this was a guy who was captured when he was only 2 years old. He had never been around another whale his whole life.
Huh.
He had lived in a tiny tank in Mexico City when they brought him up to Oregon and fattened him up and, you know, tried to teach him how to catch fish.
Right, right.
Things like that. And he did not want to go. But after they actually kind of pushed him out, there were three different communicators, three of us, who would connect up once in a while, every few months, and we would check in with Keiko. And usually it was Bonnie Norton down in Oregon would send us a list of questions. And then we would all independently talk to Keiko, get the answers, and then send them back to her. And she'd compare them and put it out back, you know, so we'd all get the feedback. And we were always getting the same things from him.
Huh, amazing.
So that was a way that we could check ourselves and say, right. you know, is this just me or am I really getting him?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is a way you can do that.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask what the first thing that they told you was. In other words, what is it? I have a strange thing that happens to me with plants. Okay.
Yeah.
So I sort of understand what you're talking about, but I also have two dogs that I can't understand for the life of me. So
you're not listening, Mike.
That's probably true.
You're one of those guys that.
And neither are they, Mary.
Well, I bet they sit and they stare at you, right? And you sit there and you go, what? What?
Yeah, oh, it's amazing, actually. but anyway, I do intuit what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But is it like a relationship? In other words, do certain things apply? Where, in other words, you have to sort of introduce yourself and then
yes.
establish trust and then move along a relationship like you do with anything else.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I work on the phone with clients around the world, and so, you know, I'm connecting in with animals that, you know, maybe have never done this. You know, some weird voice is coming into their head from God knows where.
Yeah, you never think about what the animal's thinking.
Oh, I do.
I'm projecting, I guess. But
you know,
but
sometimes, you know, I'll say, hi, you know, hi, Skippy. And he'll go, who are you? Where are you? You know, so I always say, you know, my name's Mary, and I'm a friend of your mom, and she wants me to help you talk to her. Is that okay? And usually they go, yeah, cool. You know, most of the time, they're almost always willing to talk, but sometimes it is a little scary for them. I've had clients report, you know, the dog runs and hides in his crate, or. You know, goes under the table or something like that, and sometimes they just sit there and their ears move around.
Amazing.
You never know.
Right. So you actually do it. You do it telepathically. It doesn't matter where you are. You can tune in to a certain animal, pet, or whatever, just by being on the phone with the owner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a little bit like being a satellite.
And the owner is probably a bad choice of words, huh?
They're a person.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like being a satellite dish, you know. We're all connected energetically. So my job is to tune my receiver into the right electrical channel. And I really think I get to the animal through the person. So I'm talking to that person. There's this connection being made between us. She's telling me about Skippy. That helps me to complete the connection. And once I'm there, then I can, you know, find out what's going on for him emotionally or physically and mentally. I'm mainly, I do a lot of negotiating.
Uh-huh.
And I work a lot with people, you know, when they've got health issues.
Uh-huh.
So we're trying to find out where it hurts and things like that.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's an endless amount of things you can talk to your animal about.
Well, there are going to be a lot of questions then, because I'm sure you've asked them many interesting things.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that we'll take a break here, okay?
Okay.
Let's do that. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more specifically about... I'm a person that's interested in experience, you know, for the most part. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the actual things that have happened, some of the questions that you have, maybe some of the conversations that you've had, and what the concerns are, you know, of these other species, what they think is going on, this sort of thing. We'll talk a little bit about that, okay?
That sounds great.
All right, cool. All right, everybody, hang in there. It's going to be great. Mary J. Getten with us live from her place. Where are you at in Washington, Mary? You're still on the island?
Orcas Island.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So
San Juan Island.
Amazing. Just off the coast of Canada there, not far from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be with her for, the next hour and a half for sure. So, okay, Mary, stick around. We'll be back in a minute, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And we'll have a little piece of music here from... Well, let's play a song from Bachman. This one is called Squirrel View, appropriately. And we'll come back and talk with Mary in just a few minutes. On the web, check her out at www.marygetten.com. And you can link there from my site from here on out. And if you're in the chat room over there, feel free to post your questions and comments. I've been grabbing them here and there already, and I've got some email that I need to go take a look at. But we will do that all in just a little while. Back in just a few minutes, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We are also in the middle of our pledge drive. I won't pitch too much for you here tonight, but you know the whole shtick. We need your help to stay on the air and keep bringing you commercial-free, independent, free speech radio in mid-Missouri and all around the world on the World Wide Web. This is called Squirrel View. It's Bachman. They were doing a great job playing some rock and roll music on Friday night at the Blue Fugue, and I appreciate the guys donating their time and music to the cause here. And we'll be back in just a minute. One more time, Mary J. Getten on the web at MaryGetten, GETTEN.com. It's Mike Lister, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. View. That's Bachman on KOPN Radio Orbit. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to it here, 89.5 FM. And we've got Mary J. Getten on the line with us from her place in northwestern Washington, about as far northwest in this country as you can get. And we'll say hello again to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, listen, a guy sent me this wonderful quote at the break here, and I want to share it with you, and then I bet you'll have a comment. It's a man, his name was Scott Taylor, and he said, who are the dolphins and whales? If a friend is someone who knows everything about you and likes you anyway, then the answer is simple. They are our best friends.
Oh, you've got it, Scott.
Maybe you could expand a little bit on that and tell us some stories that sort of make you think that way.
Yeah, I can tell you some stories about that. Boy, the whales and the dolphins, they are truly special beings. You know, they live in a state of really expanded consciousness.
They must, because of their brains. I mean, my God.
Yeah, but I mean at a spiritual level, they're way beyond us. They're really connected in that sense of oneness and what a lot of people might consider enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they live. And so they're very compassionate. They're very loving. They live very much in the moment, in the present time. You know, when I've talked to whales about what are you going to do if we have a big earthquake here, you know, things like that. They just say, well, you know, we'll deal with it. We're not going to spend our time. It's such a waste of time and energy.
And worrying about the earthquake.
Thinking about things that might never happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as far as them being our friends, there's lots of stories, of course, of dolphins rescuing people at sea and pushing them to shore. And those are true stories.
Right.
But I've been in touch with some people in the last 5 years, I guess, in Europe that are very much interested in and involved with several dolphins that they call ambassador dolphins.
Huh.
And these are wild dolphins that travel around Europe and play with people. There's one up in Ireland they call Fungi. I think he's in Dingle. And there's another one called Donnie, and he zips around France and southern areas. And then there's another one that I've talked to, but I can't remember his name now. But anyway, these people, you know, over the years they connected up with me somehow, probably the internet. And from time to time, they'll send me photos of these dolphins and ask me to ask them certain questions. And so I've kept in touch with them kind of to see how this phenomenon is going. And one woman, a French woman, actually sent me a video of herself swimming with this dolphin, and rolling and playing and just really, really having an amazing interaction. And he's a completely wild dolphin.
Right.
And they're alone, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Most dolphins live in pods,
right.
Big family groups. So
right.
These guys are all alone, and it seems like, from what I get from them, really their mission is to meet with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're here to do. So you've got guys like that. And I spent 2 weeks a couple years ago in the Bahamas with Dr. John Upledger.
Who's he?
He's the founder of craniosacral therapy.
Wow.
And he is very connected in with the whales and dolphins, and he actually has a program in the Bahamas called dolphin-assisted therapy. And they bring patients down there, and the patients get to spend time in the water with the dolphins. It's actually a captive dolphin facility. And there are certain dolphins that come in and do this healing work. And they'll work on all kinds of things. And I was lucky enough to go down there and work with him for a couple weeks. And what I got to do was, you know, be like the translator, the interpreter. So while they were working, while the dolphins were actually working with patients, I would connect mentally with a dolphin and ask him, you know, is there something you need the therapist to do? Is there something you need the patient to do? Do you have a message for any of them? How do you want us to work with you?
Right.
And so it was fun for them because they got immediate feedback. And it was really fun, of course, for the patients because they got to hear directly what the dolphin had to say to them about their illness and their healing process and things like that.
And it was accurate and helpful in all this.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know what happened. I didn't talk to these people afterwards. Mm-hmm. But it was really fascinating to watch them. And, you know, I come from this, you know, semi-scientific background. So when I first got there, I was watching this and I thought, you know, this looks really kind of hokey to me. So, you know, there's this one part of me who's watching and going, yeah, I think the trainer is saying go over there to the dolphin. He's not deciding to do that on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And so right off the bat, I was personally very skeptical about what was happening. But when I sat down and talked to the dolphins, it was a whole different story. And one dolphin in particular I remember, because it was only the second time she had been in there working with people this way. She had been in sort of these shows where she jumps out of the water and, you know, people scream and laugh.
Go give her a fish, yeah.
Yeah, and she was like, you know, she said, I don't know why I'm doing this. I really like, you know, making the people laugh, and I don't get why, you know, the other dolphin really likes this. And, you know, she said, I'll try it. But, you know, she just really wasn't that into it. And by the end of the week, you know, she said to me, you know, now I get it. This is really cool. It's really fun to just, you know, get quiet and send all these frequencies into the body. And, you know, she really got into relating to people in a different way. Instead of being sort of a source of joy and entertainment, now she was getting to do some deeper work.
Actually help a little bit more seriously.
Yeah. And she was really liking it. And I talked to the trainers down there, too, and I asked them what their experience was. And they said that, you know, watching the dolphins work with people was changing their whole thoughts about exactly what a dolphin could do and how they work with them, because, you know, they felt that they had a really short attention span. You know, you couldn't get them to do anything for more than a few minutes. And here they would come in and they'd spend, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes with a couple people,
mm-hmm.
and continually go up and put their nose, their what we would call the rostrum,
yeah.
pointy part of their nose.
Uh-huh.
They would come up and they would put it on a part of a person's body that was in the water with them, and they would just send vibrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we asked them what they were doing, and often, rather than sending a specific vibration to heal something, they were sending in, like, all the healing vibrations so that, you know, whatever was off, they were getting to.
You just send the whole range of frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
To try to,
yeah.
That's amazing that you say that. I have a friend who's on the program pretty frequently. His name is Michael Heisen, and he's a marine biologist and a neurobiologist, actually, in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And he has worked as a biologist with dolphins for years and years, and he was a protege of Dr. John Lilly. And,
oh, great.
And he has a partner in his work there whose name goes by the name of Star Newland. And I'd love to introduce you to. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman, and her and Michael are doing great work. And he tells this wonderful story about how early in his days with the dolphins, and he was in the water with a dolphin that was called Dreamer, that was actually involved with the whole flipper business way back in the day. But,
oh, wow.
But anyway, Michael had a vertebrae that had been out of whack for a long, long time. And it was an old injury that happened in a sporting event, or so he got hit by a baseball or something like that. But anyway, it had always been sort of just like, you know, literally like a pain in the neck, but never anything that was super, you know, debilitating, anything like that, right? But anyway, this he tells the story. He's told it on the air before about how this dolphin, who he had got to know, in a friendly sense, really, is the way he describes it. You know, he actually knew this dolphin, and one day he spent a lot of time in the water with the dolphin, and she did exactly what you said, and she with all kinds of series of different pitched clicks and whistles and all this stuff. And he said, literally, at one point in the water, he felt the thing fix, basically. and that was it. And he's never had a problem with it since. And he's a guy that, the, you know, he's there's no reason not to believe it. It's exactly as he describes it, because he's a very serious scientist when you really get down to it.
Yeah, oh, I totally can believe that. Huh. They can do a lot of interesting things. And the dolphins seem to be very interested in people for the most part. Well, not all dolphins, I have to say. You know, it depends on the type of dolphin, because, you know, there are some dolphins that are more coastal, that are used to being around people, like the bottlenose. You get it way offshore and you hit some other types that really aren't that interested.
Mm.
But they still have that consciousness. You know, it's just like, I think animals are just like people. You have some that are very
outgoing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and those are your ambassador types, maybe. And
yeah.
Do you think, is there a sense of urgency? In other words, are they communicating any particular message, like, hey, we're trying to get you your attention, or you people are crazy, or you're all wonderful and you're on the right track, or, you know, is there anything like that going on, or do they have sort of, do they not take positions, so to speak, like that?
Well, okay, here's the thing that I get from the orcas and from the other whales that I've talked to, because I've been with gray whales, I've been with humpbacks, I've been with dolphins, I've been with orcas, and so I can really only speak to those guys. But if for the most part, they're not judging us. You know, they're not saying, "Oh, you stupid humans, you're ruining the world."
Right, you're exploding nuclear weapons in the ocean.
Right. They really, for the most part, are trying their best to help us raise our consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Before we destroy the place.
Right, that's the only answer, I guess, really.
Because they get it. I mean, they understand what's going on. And, you know, in fact, this afternoon, just, you know, in preparation for this, I sat down and I talked to Granny, who's the whale that I interview the most in the book. She's a orca here. She's the leader of a family called J-Pod. And she is... 95 this year. 95 years old.
Amazing.
Yeah. And she's still hanging in there, which I can't believe. Because the average lifespan for an orca is about 60, a female.
Wow.
But I said to her, you know, Granny, I said, I'm going to be on the radio tonight, and I just wanted to ask you, you know, if there was something you wanted to say.
How cool.
And she said, you know, I want people to know they really have to love the planet and take care of it. And she said the health of this planet is more important than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've talked to them about it, you know, they feel the warming of the seas, and they see the shifting, you know, different fish species dying off. And, you know, the food chain in the ocean is so sensitive to you know, every little link is so important.
Right.
And there's a lot going on in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, I mean, it's not only the food, it's the pollution, it's the sound.
Right.
What's the Navy sonar, the global temperature mapping, you know, all this stuff is affecting them.
Right.
But...
you have to meet Star and Michael. You know, they've been visiting with the Navy in Hawaii for months now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are trying really hard, you know, to bring the awareness of this stuff up.
Yeah.
To the people who are actually doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
But anyway, okay, so please continue. This is amazing.
Yeah. Well, so they are aware of a lot of things that are going on. And, in fact, when I first started working with Granny, you know, we were asking a lot of questions. And then one day I said, hey, let's ask her what she wants to ask us. You know, let's turn the tables, you know, because we were so intent on the agenda of getting all these questions answered.
Right. What do they want to know about us? Right?
Yeah, so I said, hey, Granny, okay, what do you want to know about us?
Uh-huh.
And she said, what are you doing to limit your numbers?
Wow.
I was like, whoa.
Whoa. Cut right to the chase, huh?
Yeah. She didn't mess around. She went right for the main issue, and I was like, wow, okay, you know.
What was the answer? Not much?
Well, you know, I told her what I was doing personally.
Right, and that's all you can do, really.
Yeah, and I said, you know, I we I know that, you know, where there's too many of us.
Right.
And they're very aware of that. But, yeah, they feel a little sorry for us often. But I think for the most part, they really are trying to help us to raise our consciousness. And, you know, I've spent 4 trips now. I've gone down 4 years in a row. I've gone down to San Ignacio Lagoon.
Where's that?
It's in Baja.
Off the coast of California.
Yeah, down, yeah.
Southern.
About
yeah, yeah,
600
yeah.
miles south of San Diego.
Right,
south
right.
of the border. And down in Baja, there's 3 lagoons where the gray whales go to have their calves and mate, and they have a big party down there
right.
every winter. And for every year now, I've taken a group down there, and we go to San Ignacio Lagoon, and that's where the friendly whales are. And now when I say friendly, I mean these whales, these are gray whales,
okay.
40 feet long.
Right, huge animal.
Huge, 40 tons. They come right up to our little boat and ask you to scratch them like a cat. And they will lay there and they'll roll over. And I have put my lips on at least 10 different whales
huh.
in these years.
Amazing.
You know, just little babies. Moms bring their babies over, let you play with them, let you kiss them, let you pet them. It's just unreal. And this is a species that we almost wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
We got every last gray whale in the Atlantic. There are very few left in Korea, Japan, that area. I mean, like a couple hundred.
Right.
And the rest are the ones left along the Pacific coast, but they were almost completely wiped out back in the early part of this century.
Mm.
And so they've come back now. But there's maybe, we don't know, 18 to 22,000.
Planet-wide?
Of gray whales.
Right. Around the planet, though.
Well, they're only here.
Right, but I mean, that's all of them. You think.
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
That's all there are. And here they are. With, you know, they're in these lagoons with their little babies, and they want to come over and hang out with us.
Wow.
To me, that's unbelievable.
It is. It's outrageous.
And also, these lagoons were one of the reasons they almost did get wiped out, because the whalers went in there when they were in there calving and just slaughtered them. So this is an area where they were
put a
hunted.
Buddhist to shame, you know?
Yeah. But I'll tell you, you get into an area like that, and the energy and the consciousness and the presence is so clear. When I get to the San Ignacio Lagoon, it's like the world disappears. You're totally in present time. You're in that happy, kind of blissed out state, and you just smile for the whole time you're there.
Wow, that's so cool.
It is.
Are they, do you think that they're capable of migrating back to the Atlantic eventually?
No.
No?
No, because they would have to go way up, all the way around.
You have to go all the way around somehow, yeah.
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 And they don't go far enough south to go through the Panama Canal.
You couldn't take the canal. Unless there was a shift of some sort, and maybe the climate changes or something.
Well, that's true.
I don't know.
But,
I mean, who knows? I'm just speculating. But
yeah,
it'd be great if they could, you know, if they could, because, my gosh. But, well, what do they think of all of this noise? We talked a little bit about sonar, low frequency active sonar.
Mm-hmm.
This business that the Navy does. Have you gotten any information or communication about whether that's just sort of a nuisance or whether it's really as damaging as some people think it may be?
It's really damaging.
Oh man,
it is. You know, there have been several incidences, well documented incidences so far, where the military has been testing their sonar stuff. There was one in the Bahamas. I don't know, maybe 8 years ago now. And I think there were about 25 different whales that all washed up in a particular area with, you know, blown eardrums, bleeding from the brain.
Oh, man.
Just all kinds of things going on, and they weren't just one type. You know, it was several different species. And there was a guy there, Ken Balcom, who's actually runs the Center for Whale Research here in the San Juans, and several of these whales landed on the beach where he was in the Bahamas. So that was a very interesting coincidence because he knew what he was looking at and managed to document everything that was going on, and he pushed the Navy on it. And they eventually admitted that, yeah, they were doing this in the area. Just a few years ago, the same thing happened here, right in front of the Center for Whale Research.
Oh, man.
This boat was blasting out this sonar. Now, J-Pod, my friends, were right there. They were totally confused. They were all huddled up against the shore, didn't know what to do. There was a minke whale in the area, which is a small baleen whale, and every time they would blast off the sonar, he would actually hurl himself completely out of the water.
Oh, my gosh.
There were porpoises that were, you know, just high speed, going as fast as they could, trying to get out of there.
Uh-huh.
So, again, this was documented, and I think we actually got it passed where the military said they would not use it in these inland waters.
Mm.
But when I talked to the whales about it, they said that they've definitely been around that sound before out at sea. But out at sea, you know, it was annoying, but they were never that close to it.
And it dissipates probably better or something.
Absolutely, because this area, it's like an underwater mountain range.
And, right, and it's probably just reverberating around in there.
Exactly.
My God.
Exactly. And actually, there was a woman I know who runs one of the whale watch boats here. She was on the boat, on the water, when this was happening, and she started getting severe ringing in her ears. Now, she was above the water.
Oh, my gosh.
And that lasted for a couple years.
And the sensitivity of these creatures' hearing apparatus is a zillion times what ours is, or something crazy
absolutely.
Like this.
Absolutely, yeah. It's off the charts.
Right, right.
Can't even compare it to us.
Right.
So right. That is it's a big issue for them. And we had a year here. It was in about 96, I think, where we had what we considered a big die-off. Over a couple years, we lost about 20 whales here.
Man, and that's
a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and in a population of 90.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Holy cow.
And so since all this sonar stuff has been happening, there has been a speculation that perhaps they were out testing on the whales, you know, practicing, things like that, and it was killing them.
My gosh.
But they're out, you know, in an area where it's very rare for us to get a whale body, actually. You know, they sink.
Yeah, most of the time they sink. I had a person on the air one time tell me that when a whale sinks to the bottom of the ocean, it becomes its own reef.
Yeah.
Essentially, and creates such a huge variety of life off of its own body, you know.
Yeah, it feeds a lot of critters.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a little break here. We're just about top of the hour. We'll come back and talk a little bit more, okay?
Sounds great.
Yeah, there's a few questions that are coming up from the website.
And
we've got quite a few things that I've got here on my list. So we've got plenty to talk about. We'll come back and do it, all right?
Okay.
All right, everybody. Mary J. Getten on the web at MaryGetten, MaryGetten.com. You can link over there from my site at MikeHagan, HAGAN.com, of course. And this program will be up in the archives. Probably within 24 hours or so, we'll get it up there. And if you missed the program tonight, you can download it and get the podcast, whatever, and check it out, share it with your friends, okay? All right, in the meantime, we'll listen to a piece of music here from my friend, Ruth Acuff. The song is called The Breeze. Her band is called Rutherford, and they're making great music, her and Jeff Mueller and Jason. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the other guy who's playing guitar for his name. But anyway, great music. And this is from their CD called Mapping Out Chaos. It's called The Breeze. Take a few minutes here during the break to go over to KOPN.org and make a donation. We're in the middle of our pledge drive. only be doing it for a couple more days. We're trying to raise $30,000 to keep the station running for a few more months here. We sort of shoestring the whole business, and as I said earlier, it's pretty simple. You want to support your local Ace Hardware, you go buy stuff from Ace Hardware. You want to support the local Frosty Malt shop, you go buy a Frosty Malt. You want to support free speech, independent, commercial-free, kick-ass internet and traditional radio, then KOPN deserves a few of your dollars as well. All right. It's Mike. You're listening to it on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Radio Orbit. This is The Breeze, Rutherford. Back in a few minutes with Mary J. Gettin. Interesting stuff. We're talking about animals, communication, and intelligence out there all around us.
Rush around to shops and stores. We spend our nights behind closed doors. With arms around our first-class horse. And we all want something more. So we cut ourselves with words and forget about these hopeless lies. Skies are covered with silky sleeves. We're just trying to find our peace. We'll just listen to the we'll be right back. she gathers up her hands and leaves you crying. Won't somebody save me, please? She's crying, help me, help me, help me, help me, help me, help me,
there you have it. That's called The Breeze. Again, Rutherford, my friends Ruth Acuff, Jeff Mueller. Wonderful stuff from their CD, Mapping Out Chaos. Great local independent music coming to you tonight, as always, every Monday night on Radio Orbit. It's Mike, and it's good to be with y'all. Before we get back to Mary J. Getten, who's been wonderful to stick around with us late in the nighttime, I want to say thank you to the people who have donated to the program and to the radio station. You have no idea how much it means. It really is a big deal, and I appreciate every bit of it. So, to Jeremy, thanks so much. Sushi, Ian, thank you for everything you do for me, my friend. Chaos, Marbles, all you guys, thanks so much, all right? Okay, it is, Mike, about 5 minutes after 1 a.m. now in the morning. It's about 11:05 or so out on the West Coast, where our guest is hanging on the phone, talking with us about orcas and dolphins and communication and all kinds of good stuff. So let's get right back to it with Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, well, I'm enjoying your music.
Oh, good. Thanks. It's a KOPN. The station here is a community radio station. We're not, corporate sponsored or
right. Anything
like that. And we have people, I'm a volunteer, I don't get paid to do the program. We have very few people that get paid here, only a very small staff that's very underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
But we get donations from the public and from the community, and we've been on the air for 34 years. And
wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's great, creative, wonderful people associated with the station, and as far as I'm concerned, it's the best radio around. And not just because of my own show. I mean, I like what I do, but there's also wonderful music from about every sort of genre you could ever imagine. Other kinds of talk programs, good alternative news programs, and a lot of good stuff happening. So, anyway, I appreciate the people that support us. It's an important resource here in the middle of the country, you know.
Great.
Yeah, anyway, but you're doing wonderful things out on that side of the country as well. So let's talk a little bit more about, I have some questions about animals in general that are coming in via email and on the web. And people are asking if there's a line. For example, can you do this with insects? And there are questions in particular about, what's happening with the bees? And is this something that can be done across ontological levels or something? Or?
Yeah. Since telepathy is the universal language, you can communicate with anything. I've talked to slugs, spiders, bats, anything, absolutely anything. And the bee question is interesting. In fact, Penelope Smith, who I mentioned earlier, one of my teachers,
right.
She sent an email out about 10 days ago to a lot of communicators saying she wanted to address that issue in her next newsletter.
Hmm.
And could we all talk to the bees and let her know what the bees said?
Uh-huh.
So I have to say I've been very bad. I haven't done my homework. But, yeah, that is a big question of what's going on with the bees.
All right.
And, you know, I think there's just too much going on.
Mm.
You know, it's like sort of when the immune system starts to break down. And that's going to be a very serious issue because everything we eat, most everything we eat, anything plant-like that we eat is pollinated by bees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if we take that out of the loop, we're going to be hardcore carnivores.
Yeah, and the carnivores won't have anything to eat.
They aren't going to have anything to eat. Yeah.
Or the cows or whatever we're
going to
be eating. Yeah.
It's all going to be over real fast.
Yeah, that's
and it's
crazy.
All going to be the bee.
Hmm. All right, another question here. What did the dolphins think about being used for military purposes?
Mm.
Are they, you know, are they down with it?
They don't like that.
They don't like it.
No, they don't.
What about their own free will?
Well, you know, okay, that's an interesting question because it's something I saw, you know, again at that facility I was at in the Bahamas.
Right, right.
Because, you know, people there said, oh, these dolphins, you know, they're choosing to be here. Because the facility they're in, they actually take dolphins every day out, like, to sea.
Mm-hmm.
And they follow the boat. They leap out of the water following the boat, and they take divers out there, and the divers go down and hand-feed the dolphins, and then the dolphins follow the boat back to their pen.
So if they wanted to boogie, they could.
Absolutely. And I talked to the guy that owns the place, and he said, you know, he said sometimes wild dolphins will even come in and, like, you know, try and interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they're working. They just don't even look at them. They don't acknowledge these guys. And, you know, really, it's like walking your dog without a leash.
Hmm.
So once they're well-trained, you know, they aren't going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much like a dog in that way. And then there's some of them that really are into what they're doing. They like being there with people.
Right. And they may have an agenda of their own, like you said earlier.
They may. And see, here's the thing that I find with cetaceans is that while they have this very spiritual aspect to themselves, you know, and we could think, well, they can think beyond, you know, this mundane level that most of us are at,
mm-hmm.
they're still in a body, and they're still bound by that biology of that body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you condition an animal to be in captivity or semi-captivity, just because they have free will doesn't mean they feel okay about leaving and going out in the big world, especially
right.
animals that are family-oriented
right.
and they
I
live
mean,
with their families forever.
Okay, all right. I mean, you can do it to a human being, right?
Sure.
I mean, and so it's certainly not a question of intelligence. It's a question of conditioning and this sort of thing.
Correct. Like with Keiko.
Uh-huh.
He was socially inept. He didn't know how to connect and socially act with other whales. He didn't know how to hunt for himself. He didn't know how to feed himself.
Uh-huh.
He didn't know where to go to find food. You know, all of that is learned with the family. And so, you know, for him, for us to expect him to go out there and just, you know, go on his merry way,
mm-hmm.
that's like, you know, raising somebody for 20 years in a closet and then one day saying, gosh, you better be free. Let's just set you down in Central Park and, you know, have a life.
What did they eventually do with Keiko? Did they release Keiko?
Well, Keiko was in a pen up in Iceland, and they kept taking him out on sea walks, just like with these dolphins,
uh-huh.
where he would follow the boat and... he would go out and he wouldn't interact with whales. That went on for years, and he always followed the boat back. And then eventually he started staying out a little bit more, and he would interact a little bit with some whales. And then he stayed out, and I'm not sure if, you know, honestly, if they managed to just ditch him out there. But he was out there for a couple weeks with whales and then disappeared. And he swam all the way from Iceland to Norway and went up a fjord, and little kids came out and jumped in the water and started playing with him, and he was so happy.
Huh.
Because he always wanted to be with people.
And with children.
Yeah. But then, of course, they, you know, made all the people stay away, and they carted him off, and he died.
Yeah.
He died up there, and, you know, he died of a broken heart, to be honest. He kept telling them again and again and showing them that he did not want to be a wild whale. He was not a wild whale anymore. We had made him into something else, and he was perfectly happy being that. You know, he loved people, and he loved connecting with them. And it just, you know, it just killed him, really, to be out there all by himself and to not have any interaction with people.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not the right choice for that experiment. There are whales around that would love to try that, but he wasn't the right one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All
right.
You got some more questions?
Sure we do. How about this one? Do the cetacea communicate with other life on and off this planet? Obviously, they communicate with us. Are they interested in other creatures, and do they communicate? There's a lot of talk about their ability to, you know, transmit electromagnetic frequencies and, you know, and all this stuff. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I asked them about that. And, you know, they do communicate with other animals in the sea, much like we do with other animals on the land.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have that connection to the stars. When I first talked to the whales about that, and they mentioned things about coming from the stars or traveling to the stars, that they had stellar origins, I was like, oh, no, I don't want to hear this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is getting too weird. But over time, I got used to them talking about it, and okay now, but they said that they did come here from other star systems, and in fact, in this area, or actually I think around the world, the harbor porpoises, which are a small cetacean, they're going back to their star. So they're disappearing. Their numbers are going down, and when I asked about it, Granny said that they were going back.
Do you mean in a physical sense, as they're dying?
Yeah. But it's not like they're washing up all over. Their numbers are just going down.
Oh.
Which is very interesting.
Very interesting.
And something that's going on around here that's even more interesting is that the harbor porpoises have been mating with the doll's porpoise, and they've actually created a new critter.
Huh.
That's like a combination of the two.
Cool.
Yeah, they've been documented many times, but I don't think they've been named yet.
Huh.
So, yeah. So, while, you know, sometimes we get a little hopeless about all these species that are leaving, there's new ones popping up, too.
I think that that's probably the case in the Amazon and all around, too. Not that we're not in the middle of crises. I recognize the situations, you know, in many, many places. And in the ocean, you know, I'm a diver, and I've seen coral bleaching with my own eyes, and I've seen the devastation of the reefs because of these small changes in temperature, and then the chain reaction that follows when the reef dies, you know.
Yeah.
So I recognize it, but at the same time, there are wondrous things that are happening too, and it's interesting that maybe, you know, the Earth responds and species respond to pressures, and I guess maybe that's what a lot of this is about, is that the pressure is building, and when these things happen, well, you get sort of a separation of the wheat from the chaff, and some species make it and some don't.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Granny has told me many times, she said, you know, don't you worry about the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, even if you guys mess it up really bad and you're all dead, the earth is going to regenerate itself. Mm-hmm. She said it will come back. You know, it's going to take a long time, but it will come back. Right. You won't be here.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, it will survive.
Right, right. Well, that's an interesting, you know, it encourages humility, I guess.
Right.
You know, to recognize that the weight of the world doesn't really weigh, it's not on your shoulders. At the same time, it's important that you recognize that you do play a part in it.
Absolutely. You know, I think that humans get so arrogant thinking, well, we're causing everything, and so we've got to fix everything.
Right.
You know, we're just a part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can fix everything, and I don't think we're causing everything. I read something recently. I wish I knew where it was. But it was, you know, this whole story about global warming.
Mm.
And this was an article that said that our solar system is heating up. All the planets are heating up.
Yes. I've reported on a lot of that stuff on the show here. I talk about, you know, the sun a lot. I'm one of these people that likes to watch the sun for years. I've studied the sun. And anybody who's worth their salt, who's been watching the sun for the last 15 years, knows that there's been certainly an increase of activity on the sun that's unprecedented. I mean, solar storms and gigantic flares that are outrageous. But as you mentioned, there's lots of evidence that there's a whole thing that's happening in the solar system at large, and maybe it's because of galactic influences. Who knows? Maybe it's, you know, the part of space that we're moving through right now. That's, I think, your point, and I think it's well taken, is that it's an arrogant position to say that we know what's happening.
Right.
And if you don't have clarity on what's happening, then you certainly shouldn't be prescribing solutions.
Right.
You know?
Right. Not to say we shouldn't, you know, do things to
help
wherever we can,
but
to think that, you know, we did it and we can fix it is not an accurate view, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. Which doesn't mean, you know, that you shouldn't try to recognize your impact and all these things and try to be sustainable and try to encourage, you know, new energy sources and all these things.
Yeah.
Of course, but
But
again, like we say, you know, don't wear the weight of the whole world, because like you say, the world and the earth has probably seen much more than we know, and she'll roll around to the next metamorphosis, whatever that might be, you know.
That's right. And there's all kinds of planets for us to go to.
You know, I have a friend who used to say that's one of the things that's happening is that the human imagination can no longer be contained on this planet, because it's now devastating, you know, the biosphere that and it's sort of like Siliosky, that Russian rocket scientist who said, certainly the Earth is the cradle of mankind, but you cannot stay in the cradle forever.
Great.
And his idea was that, it's either, you know, the only way out is up, sort of a separation between the mother and the child, almost, a birthing of things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder what the orcas and the dolphins have to say about that. Do they think that you said earlier, that they're very interested in us raising our level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
What, maybe you could expand on that a little
bit. Well, actually, yeah, it's raising our consciousness, but also going back to what you might think of as a more ancient consciousness, or you know, the way of looking at the world as a whole, and humans only being a part of it.
A living world.
A living world, right, and communicating with nature and respecting it and using only what you need and making sure you don't soil it, and that consciousness that, you know, the native peoples had, you know, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, before we got so darn civilized. So, you know, they see that as actually, like, that's what's necessary, is to come kind of full circle back to that way of respect and love for the planet, and seeing our place in it. Because I see people all the time that just don't have any real connection with how the world, the natural world, works.
Right.
You know, when
Oh my gosh, yes.
When I was in rehab, you know, people would call up and they'd say, oh, you got to get down here right away. You know, there was a fox and he had this little fawn in his mouth. And so we, you know, we beat the fox with a bat and we got the fawn and the fawn, you know, got a hurt leg and you got to come. And it would be like, oh, no, you know. Now the fox missed his dinner. He's probably got a hurt back and, you know, the fawn's going to die anyway. And, you know, this is how nature works.
Right.
You know, this is a planet where everybody eats everybody else.
Right. I mean, there's really no moral high ground when it comes to eating.
No.
I mean, everything was alive at some point before you ate it.
That's right. And people always assume that I'm a vegetarian. You know, they say, well, how could you eat something you can talk to? And I tell them, well, I can talk to a carrot.
Right, so, right.
You know, mm-hmm. You can talk to plants. You can talk to fruit.
Yeah. That's one thing that I actually can say that I agree with you. I mean, from an experiential point, I have a relationship with plants. There's no question about it in my life. I'm a plant person for sure. So.
And you'll still eat plants.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And in fact, the plants encourage you to eat them. They give themselves up. Freely. All they want is a little bit of recognition. All they want is a little bit of respect, you know, that they are something other than just, you know, fodder for monkeys.
Absolutely. Hey, now, don't start getting on the monkeys. let me ask you this. So in your talking to plants or communicating with plants,
mm-hmm.
do you generally go with the individual, or do you go to what we call like the Devic or the nature spirit level of that plant?
Well, I think it's an individual thing. I think for me, it's like you said, it's like talking to a person.
Okay.
It's weird. Like I may have a group of plants. This is the outdoor plants, right, that grow from the earth or whatever. And there may be one plant that's larger, for example, than all the other plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be like the mother block, you know, with the main root system or whatever. And that's the one that sort of speaks for the rest of them or something.
Great.
At least for me, you know. And I don't claim to say how other people experience these things. But in my experience, in my intuition, that's what's happening. And it's certainly tangible. It's not metaphor, any of this stuff, you know. It's absolutely like you and me talking, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So, yeah, that's how it is for me with animals. And, you know, I also talk to plants and trees. Trees
oh,
are
my gosh.
Dead easy to talk to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the trees, I think. It's weird. You know, I have, I mentioned this now and again on the show, and I don't even like to bring it up very often, but because it always ends up creating more trouble sometimes. But I have Lakota ancestry in my own bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I sort of think that, you know, my teachers, my elders, my grandfathers and grandmothers taught me that the spirit world is a lot like this one, basically. And that spirits can move into different animations, can move into different forms. And so your grandmother, who may have passed away in 1955, she may now be, you know, a 52-year-old oak tree somewhere. And she may speak, and she may be in your own yard, watching over you and your grandchildren, you know. And I think it's very, very interesting that this sometimes comes through. And that these are sort of old spirits or something, and sometimes ancestors or relations of some sort. Of course, we're all related. That's what my ancestors tell me.
That's the bottom line. You know, we are all related. We're all interconnected. We really are all one. And there's no difference in consciousness. It's just different bodies that we're in.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really true.
I
think that's true, but again, sort of the laws and the rules of a courteous human behavior sort of apply, and you have to, you know, if you don't give a damn about something, it's not going to give a damn about you. In many cases,
yeah, for the
in
most part.
In many cases, now the dolphins and the cetaceans may be different. They may really care about us because they may, as you say, they have a different level perhaps,
mm-hmm.
and look at us more the way we look at pets or something. You know, they
yeah.
want to help us or something.
Yeah, it's a little better than that analogy.
Good. Hopefully
yeah, it's
not
a little
pets.
Higher than that. But, yeah, they do. And, you know, it's one thing that I think, you know, I think really the biggest problem on the planet today is that disconnection from nature that we have. And,
oh, boy.
And when I say nature, I mean the plants, the minerals, the animals, that we just don't have that connection anymore, and so we've lost our place, and we feel alone, and, you know, people are getting aggressive and neurotic, and,
right.
you know, if they would just go and sit in the woods for an hour every day, they'd
right.
be fine, because
yeah.
the trees would take care of them.
That's very true.
You know, I need to get you to come out to this thing that I'm part of called the Fairy and Human Relations Congress.
Well, you know what? I've got a whole list of stuff that you've done, and I tell you, that one, that's right at the bottom of the list, but I was going to say, what in the heck is this thing about the Fairy and Human Relations Congress?
Well, it's exactly what we're talking about. It's a gathering that we've had. This is our seventh year coming up. It's June 22nd to 24th this year, and there's usually about 300 people. We get together for 3 days, and there's all kinds of amazing presentations, and we spend time every day connecting with the fairy realm.
That's awesome.
So we sit together, and we communicate with all the nature spirits and the fairies and the devas, and it's our attempt to start to heal that relationship. You know, Native people always connected with the nature spirits. And, you know, peoples in Western culture back before the Industrial Revolution, you know,
right.
that was a big part of it, was always connecting in with those spirits that help things grow. And
do you know,
we've lost that.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's wonderful. Do you know where the fairy ring is?
Yeah.
You know, the mushroom fairy rings? Well, I'm sort of a mushroom enthusiast, and I live in the country and in Missouri, and there's lots of, you know, it's a good climate for that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this wonderful mushroom fairy ring that occurs on the land where I live every so often, and it's magical, you know. And I get a chill when you talk about it. So.
Well, next time it pops up, go sit and talk to it.
Oh, I do. Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this thing that you're doing is really interesting. I'd love to know more about it. You do it every year?
Yeah, we do it every year. Yeah, go to fairycongress.com. It's F-A-I-R-Y congress.com. And you'll see a lot of stuff on there about presenters and, you know, the fairy world. And they're trying to make the website like the resource for fairy stuff worldwide. So they're starting to put a lot of effort into getting this website really expanded and, you know, good books and all that kind of stuff. But we just have a blast and really just amazing people, you know, people from Findhorn. And this year we've got people coming from Europe, and we've got some native guys that are going to come and talk about fairies in the native Northwest Coast Salish tribes. We've got a Tibetan Lama, you know. So it's pretty wild, and we have a lot of fun there, and just connecting in with the earth spirits and thanking them and trying to, you know, repair that relationship.
Right. All right, well, look, let's take another quick break here.
Sure.
And we'll come back and we'll have another 20 minutes or so to talk a little bit more about, well, I got plenty of stuff to talk about, so lots of questions coming in, some really interesting ones. I'm trying to decide which ones to ask, actually.
Good.
But we'll take a little break here, get a glass of water or something, and we'll come back in just a minute, okay?
All right,
everybody, Mary J. Getten on the web at MaryGetten, GETTEN.com. She's a wonderful woman, obviously, and doing great work and writing interesting stuff as well. She has a book that's called Communicating with Orcas, which actually won quite a prestigious little award this morning that's called the Nautilus Award. And it's an award for book writing, and creative, intelligent people. And congratulations to Mary for winning the Nautilus Award for 2007 for her book Communicating with Orcas. We'll ask Mary when we come back how people can get the book. I'm sure it's available through her website. And again, you can connect with her through my site at MikeHagan.com. We'll come back with Mary for a few more minutes, in just a few more minutes. In the meantime, let's listen to a piece of music here from In Thicket. Great stuff from Derek and the band. This one's called The Modern Lights. Back in a minute, this is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, on the web at KOPN.org. Accepting donations all the time. Hint, hint. the Modern Lights. That's In Thicket. And this is Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. All the music you've been listening to tonight is from, well, bands that are local or regional players around here in the mid-Missouri area. Independent, amazing, talented musicians that all have one thing in common, and that is that they played at the KOPN benefit down at the Blue Fugue on Friday night, just last Friday. And I wanted to give my props to them and play some of their music tonight. You've been hearing In Thicket, Bachman, Johnny O and the Jerks, incarnated as the Hoot and Hollers on Friday night, Rutherford, Caulfield and the Magic, and Big Medicine, all who donated their time and their art last Friday to KOPN and to all the listeners that were lucky enough to get down there to see that amazing show. All right, thanks a lot one more time, and let's get back to Mary J. Gettin on the line with us from Washington State and hanging out with the orcas up there, and they got a few things to talk with us about, as do many other critters, it seems. So, Mary, how are you?
I'm great.
All right. Thanks again. I've had a wonderful time talking with you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
All right, let's I'm actually going to do you mind if I open the phone line and see if anybody wants to call us?
No, it's fine.
We'll do that. The number is 573-443-8255 if anyone would like to call and talk with Mary. I also have plenty of questions here coming in from email and from the chat, so we'll do that really quick here. Mary, before the break, you were talking about all these different people that are coming together and talking about, well, among them there seems to be a common thread of sort of ancient tradition, and you mentioned earlier that this seems to be what's happening. And I'd like you to talk a little bit more about this. I had a friend who used a metaphor called it the archaic revival. And is something like that happening? And do you think it's necessary?
Well, I do think it's necessary. And I think it's happening in some circles. You know, there seems to be a resurgence of interest in more traditional cultures or
Earth-based, indigenous type.
Yeah, earth-based, indigenous. And I think that, you know, that it's mainly about bringing back that consciousness of respect and interconnectedness with everything. Because when we've lost that, you know, we're just floundering around and making a mess out of things. But if we could still see exactly where we are in the chain, it's much easier to take care of things around us.
All right. Mary, let's take a phone call here, all right?
Sure.
Good evening. You're on Radio Orbit. Who's this?
Hey, Mike. Bob Bold.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Wonderful show.
Thank you very much. You have something you want to mention to Mary, perhaps?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask your guest. I think the fairy thing is incredibly interesting. And I haven't really been up on it much lately, but I know Findhorn Garden was originally established in the British Isles out of relationships with the earth spirits, with fairies and divas and things like that. Are they still active in that kind of research, that sort of work? Does the author know that or not?
Yeah. Findhorn is still going. As far as I know, they are still communicating with the nature spirits there. And we have Dorothy McLean, who was one of the three original founders of Findhorn, is coming back this year to the Fairy Congress. She's been there a couple times. We've had some other people from Findhorn, some of the original people. So they're still out there promoting this. Absolutely.
Oh, good. That's truly encouraging. Are they still into the remarkable plant work they were doing? You know, they apparently were able to get incredible plants to grow in soil, you know, sort of sandy soil, which just really wasn't necessarily very suitable for gardening. Are they still doing that kind of work, or they've
What I heard most recently was that they had kind of backed off of some of that.
You know, that's what I had heard, too.
Yeah, and I think because they started that about 30 years ago, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was a fantastic experiment. When you start talking about the plant world, another interesting book, have you read The Secret Life of Plants?
Sure, Peter Tompkins.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Tompkins,
yeah.
He came. He was one of our speakers, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, he died like 6 months ago, didn't he?
Yeah, he died just earlier this year, late last year, early this year, actually. Yeah.
Who?
Peter Tompkins, he died just about 6 months ago.
He
He did, yeah. I talked about it a little bit on the show here, yeah.
Oh, no.
Maybe 3 months ago, 4 months ago, something like that, yeah.
That's the guy they should do a screenplay of his
life. And it wasn't just the work he did on plants. My God, he wrote about the Giza pyramids. He wrote about all kinds of stuff. And
he was
brilliant.
With the British intelligence during the war, and he was like a super spy or something.
Right.
He was with the SSI.
He wrote this book. Yeah. He wrote this book called The Eunuch and the Virgin, which is he wrote all kinds of strange. This is the most outrageously weird and cool book I've ever read. And John Jenkins turned me on to that. He had that in his archaic library back there in Colorado. But anyway,
yeah, I read the pyramid book and also the Mexican pyramid book too. He also wrote a book on the Mexican pyramid.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm going through my library and I'm pulling books that I haven't been at for a couple of years, so I'm pulling out all these old books I've been into. I'll just keep listening, but it's a wonderful show, and I think we can't have enough of this sense of the earth spirit. This is a really important thing we need to get in touch with if we're going to lead people in this direction. See, to my mind, it's like deep ecology needs a spiritual base. It's not just enough to talk about global warming and the science. You need a spiritual connection with that, and that's so important.
Bob, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Mary, how about this one? This is something that we talk about on this program a lot. I'm not sure if you're... I don't know if you're interested in this stuff, but there's a lot of people that talk about the time frame around 2012 as being significant for lots of different reasons. The Mayan calendar rolls over at that particular time, and there are a lot of people that for other reasons say that this is sort of a significant time. Have any of the animals that you communicate with, be they cetacea or otherwise, talked about the near future, and I don't really even care about putting dates on it, but, do they say that something has to happen pretty quickly or change has to happen soon?
They don't ever put, like, a time frame on things. They have said, though, that, they see this, sort of wave of consciousness coming in that is changing things, and they feel very hopeful that things are going to change. But, yeah, the 2012 thing, the animal kingdom, they don't pay any attention to stuff like that.
Uh-huh, right. That's just sort of a human thing that we can use to put our focus on or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay, let's see. Let's peek in the chat room real fast here. The number, one more time, 443-8255. You got a couple more minutes if you want to get in here and give us a call. And my guest, if you haven't heard, is Mary J. Getten, and you can find out information about Mary on the web at www.marygetten.com, and you can link over there from my site as well from here on out. Let's see. Lots of people here talking in Washington. I have lots of listeners up there, believe it or not, Mary.
Great.
In the Northwest, in Oregon and in Washington State, lots of wonderful, open-minded, really thoughtful, creative people up there, man. What a great place that you live.
Yeah, I feel very lucky.
let's see. Okay, right here. An interesting one. This person was paying attention. It says, early in the program, Mary expressed that she was not interested in getting in the water with the wild orca.
Mm-hmm.
If the orca is as intelligent as she says, why the fear?
Yeah, okay, this goes back to that thing I was saying about sort of the two aspects to the whales, where you have this really highly spiritual nature and very intelligent, and yet on the other hand, you have this wild creature.
Mm.
And so, sometimes...
Yeah,
they're in a body. And while they're in that body, things happen.
Mm.
And, it's kind of like... trying to explain that the other night to somebody. We were talking about enlightened masters, and how come sometimes they're, doing things with their students they shouldn't be, And I said, as long as you're in a body, those things happen.
Right.
Even if you're in an expanded state spiritually, you still got to deal with the body thing.
Isn't that the truth of the matter?
And I had asked Granny straight out, what would happen if we, were got in the water with you? And, you know, it was hard to tell if she was kidding or not. But she said, you know, well, it depends how much you look like a seal. We might see what, you know, how far you would fly. So I just took that as, you know, better off not to.
Right. Take care of the land. We'll take care of the water and let's talk.
Yeah, actually, absolutely. Yeah. I did a swim with humpbacks trip back in September, and, and that was fun. But and I didn't. I never felt like they were going to try to hurt us.
Right.
Although they could have.
Oh
easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah,
the fact that these orcas in captivity are in captivity and pretty much have gone in on their own volition, apparently, because I mean, if they wanted to, they could. As you and I were talking about off the air, they could fling those divers anywhere they want. They could bite them and do whatever they want if they wanted to get out of there. They don't have to get on that stretcher.
Well, the only way they're going to get out of there is, yeah, on a stretcher. And they do that to trainers sometimes. In fact, there's never been a recorded incident of an orca attacking a person in the wild, but they've killed several trainers and hurt a lot of trainers.
Sure.
And who could blame them?
Who could blame them?
Yeah. You know, they're in this horrible little tank, and
showing tremendous restraint.
They do. They show tremendous restraint because it's very hard for them to be. You know, an orca is a creature that travels up to 100 miles a day. And so if you think of someone like Lolita, for instance, she's at the Miami Seaquarium. She's been there for over 30 years. She's from my neighborhood. She's from El Pod, one of the local families here. And she's been in a tank that is, I think, 12 feet deep and about 40 feet long. Now, she's 20 feet long.
My God.
And she's been in that bathtub for 30 years. All, you know, she doesn't have any other whales with her anymore, her companions. She had a whale friend in there that died, and she has a little dolphin now. And, you know, when I've talked to her, she's very depressed. You know, sometimes she doesn't even want to talk about getting out of there, and sometimes that's all she can talk about. You know?
Wow.
I think it's very typical of that sort of depressed state where sometimes you have hope and sometimes you just wish it was all over.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we're not going to end on that note.
No,
that's for
let's
sure.
not.
How about this one? A gentleman writes in and asks about the Northwestern Native American connections to the orcas. Could you speak to that at all?
Just a little, you know. I don't know that much about it. I've read some of their legends. I know that the Northwest Coast Indians, a lot of them believe that the great warriors come back as orcas.
Hmm.
And we actually had a situation here a few years ago. There was a small whale that named Luna. He was also from El Pod. And he got lost from his family and ended up in a place called Nootka Sound, which is on the outside of Vancouver Island. And he was only about 2 years old when he got ended up there by himself, which was thought to be too young to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But he managed to survive and feed himself well in this sound. And so there was a whole lot of talk about how to get Luna back with his family. And myself and many animal communicators, we talked to him. We tried to get him to come out and look for the family. He was too afraid. I kept telling the family he was there. They kept saying he was dead. It was just the weirdest situation. And then it came out that the native people there said that he was the reincarnation of their chief.
I think I read a story about that.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
Right, and so the Canadian government was trying to capture him to bring him back down here to meet up with his family, and the native stepped in and said, no, you can't, he's our chief, and we'll look after him.
Huh.
But, so there is that belief.
All right, okay. All right, one last thing here, I think. this listener of mine keeps sending me these wonderful quotes, and I want to read this to you and then let you sort of finish off with some final comments, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Again, this gentleman, Scott Taylor, I don't know who the hell Scott Taylor is, but he's got some great ideas with regard to these animals. He says, with regard to the cetacea, they know the answers. We have the hands to make the answers come to life.
Mm-hmm.
What are they trying to tell us? What should we be doing? What's the last thing you want to talk about, Mary?
Well, I think really what they do want us to do is everything we can to keep the oceans in good shape, to clean up the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we understand even how important that is to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a frightening report recently by NOAA, National Marine Fisheries, that at the current rate, the oceans will be gone, dead, by 2030. That's just around the corner.
Oh, my gosh.
And, I mean, it was unbelievable to me. Anyway.
Well, we're going to have to do some, we're either going to change or be changed
right.
In between now and then.
Right. And I think there are plenty of things to do. Mm-hmm. And, there are a lot of people around the world, the whole messages in water thing came out. And, so there are people. Actually, I'm co-sponsoring a day, May 27th, which is a Sunday, from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., wherever you are in the world, try to get down to some natural body water, like a river, a stream, a lake, and just send your love and healing energy into the water.
Hmm.
And we're trying to get people all around the world to do this. And if we can just focus that energy, whenever we can, but it's fun to get a whole group together and go out and just really see that ocean being clean and being lots of food in there for everybody. And I honestly believe that does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does too, Mary, and I sure hope that it does.
It better.
If not, we're in deep trouble. All right. Well, look, it's been a pleasure, and we're gonna have to wrap things up here. I've got my friend Ruth gonna be on the air here in just a few minutes to play some music for the folks,
great.
And we will talk a little bit later off the air. But thank you so much for your work and for sharing it with everyone tonight. And we'll mention your book one more time, of course, Communicating with Orcas. Wonderful book that's winning awards and doing all kinds of great things. So, available on the website, I'm sure, Mary?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And through Amazon and bookstores, everything.
All right, at MaryGetten, MaryGetten.com. Mary, thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care of yourself, all right?
Let's do it again.
We'll do it.
Okay.
All right, cheers.
Bye.
All right, everybody, let's wrap things up here. Got to sneak out of here and get Ruth all set up. We'll finish things off with one last song here. From Caulfield and the Magic, of course. It's called Please Don't Leave. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Stick around for Crash Landing with Ruth in just a few minutes. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks again to Mary Getten. Wonderful stuff. Great work that you're doing. And to all the musicians that provided the music for tonight's program. As always, thanks to you guys and girls. And thanks for everyone for just, doing your thing. Take care, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week. I don't know what we're going to do. Nothing. Just me and you. We'll figure it out. Please don't leave. Caulfield and the Magic.
Cause I'm always talking, and I was afraid that what you would say might hurt. And now we're quiet at your kitchen table, and we're reading from your Popular Mechanics and Time magazine. Let's not slide.
Yeah.